Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Albright's going to be a little bit late.
Thank you. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Howard.
Howard, present.
Howard, present. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, present.
Cleborne, present. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick. Representative Crenshaw.
Crenshaw, present.
Crenshaw, present. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Mecklen.
Mecklen, present.
Mecklen, present. Representative Noor.
Noor, present.
Noor, present. Representative Sandell.
Sandell, present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Sandsted, present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson. Representative Kosnick. Representative Thompson. Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. Next, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 29th, 2022?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Christensen moves the minutes for March 29th, 2022. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for March 29th, 2022 are approved. On our agenda, first up on our agenda today, we have House File 4119 from Representative Lippert. We have 20 minutes scheduled for this bill, and we will plan to wrap it up by 3:25. I will move that House File 4119 be laid over for possible inclusion. We have before us House File 4119. Representative Lippert, welcome to the committee. Please present your bill. Excuse me, we have just one moment, Representative Lippert. Representative Kosnick, did you want to say present?
Yes, ma'am. I was unable to meet the roll call in time, so I am present.
Okay.
Sorry for that interruption.
Okay. Okay, so now we are going to move in to before us, we have House File 4119. Representative Lippert, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's good to be with you this afternoon. I'm excited to be presenting House File 4119 that will help the University of Minnesota meet its sustainability goals. We expect land-grant universities to lead, innovate, and show the way in the face of big challenges in front of us. This bill allows the university to continue showing leadership on how we can improve energy efficiency as we respond to the challenge of climate change. The bill asks for a one-time appropriation of $75 million. $5 million is for the development of campus sustainability plans system-wide. $2.5 million is for on-campus solar. $2.5 million is for electrifying the university's vehicle fleet from cars to light trucks to buses. And then $65 million is for a transition from steam to hot water and for the installation of geothermal energy. With me to testify today is Mr. Shane Sinnes, the Director of Sustainability at the University of Minnesota.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Stennis. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Shane Stennis. I'm the Director of Sustainability at the University of Minnesota, and it's a pleasure to be here today. I just want to thank all of you for taking the opportunity or giving us the opportunity to discuss the University of Minnesota's request for funding to advance sustainability. As Representative Lippert noted, this request encompasses a number of different components, which I'll go through in just a few minutes, but want to take some time to provide some broader context about what's motivating this request. The university's strategic plan, Impact 2025, identified ambitious goals and actions the institution will undertake on campus and in communities around the state to build a fully sustainable future. The request before you for $75 million will enable and accelerate key initiatives in support of this commitment. Specifically, we are seeking funds to build out infrastructure and purchase equipment that will deliver a number of benefits, including the following. It will mitigate greenhouse gas emissions that contribute to climate change. It will reduce pollution that impacts health in vulnerable and at-risk Minnesota communities. It will create job opportunities for create opportunities for academic research, innovation, and instruction in clean energy and transportation. The investments will support jobs and economic development. And finally, it'll serve as an important example for other Minnesota residents, businesses, and organizations that are considering similar actions. The largest portion of the funds, $65 million, would be used to begin the first phase of converting campus energy systems from steam to hot water and to install geothermal systems to provide heating and cooling. Our buildings at the Crookston, Morris, Duluth, and Twin Cities campuses are primarily heated through district energy systems. In these systems, a fossil fuel, typically natural gas, is burned to boil water and create pressurized steam at a central utility plant. The steam is then piped underground to individual buildings to heat rooms and often to produce domestic hot water for use in bathrooms and other facilities. Some of these systems are aging and in need of upgrades to maintain reliable heating services to support the university's mission. In addition, burning fossil fuels and using steam distribution is not aligned with our sustainability goals. To address these issues, we propose updating portions of one or more campus district energy systems to modern 21st century technology that uses geothermal generation and water distribution as opposed to fossil fuels and steam for heating and cooling. This transition aligns with state goals for emissions reduction by having more people switch to forms of heating, such as hot water and geothermal, that result in less pollution and lower emissions. The U system will not only reduce campus emissions, but also serve as an example to others. The U hosts thousands of visitors every year, and people seeing and experiencing these systems in action on U campuses can inspire those visitors to take the same actions at their homes, businesses, and organizations. We've already seen this effect at the U with other technologies, as organizations have come to tour and learn from our experience building a highly efficient combined heat and power plant, our solar carports, and many other technologies that we've deployed on campus have really served as examples for Minnesota organizations, businesses, and individuals as they pursue their own ambitions and their own priorities and programs that they're working on. Another $5 million of the funds will be used to build on this initial work, to develop the next phase of renewal plans for university energy and utility systems to achieve zero greenhouse gas emissions. From 2008 to 2020, the university reduced greenhouse gas emissions 47% system-wide and 51% on the Twin Cities campus, largely through energy conservation and changing energy supply. In the Impact 2025 plan, we made a commitment to develop a system-wide plan for reducing our emissions even further to get to net zero. Energy we consume to heat, cool, and power campus buildings is responsible for approximately 75% of the university's remaining emissions. This funding will enable us to develop concrete plans for transitioning our remaining campus energy systems and supplies to achieve emissions reduction goals while maintaining cost effectiveness for tuition and taxpayers, as well as a high degree of reliability required by U research and clinical operations. $2.5 million of the funds will be used to accelerate the transition to electric vehicles for the university's vehicle fleet. The university's fleet statewide is more than 800 vehicles, and these vehicles support travel for academic research and student learning, as well as campus maintenance and operations. We would use these funds to convert up to 150 university vehicles to plug-in hybrid electric vehicles or battery electric vehicles. We would install fast chargers at the Crookston, Morris, Duluth, and Twin Cities campuses to facilitate inter-campus travel. We would purchase the first EV waste truck in the state of Minnesota for trash and recycling hauling, and we'd fund installation for up to 25 level 2 chargers to support EV fleet operations. In addition to reducing greenhouse gas emissions, which benefits everyone, transitioning into EVs has positive benefits for communities the use facilities are located in. Cars, trucks, SUVs, and other vehicles are a source of local air pollution that harm human health. The university's campuses are in or adjacent to MPCA areas of concern for environmental justice, and people in these EJ areas are exposed to greater air pollution than other Minnesotans. Switching the U fleet to EVs would reduce these local air pollution impacts and the harms that happen to EJ communities as a result of that air pollution. The final $2.5 million of funds will be used to install solar on university facilities. Over the past several years, we have installed nearly 2.5 megawatts of solar on facilities around the university system. This is equivalent to the energy produced to power hundreds of homes. These funds would enable us to triple that total, installing up to an additional 5 megawatts of solar electric generating equipment at campuses and at research and outreach centers across the state. At least 50% of the installed capacity we project will be in locations outside the Twin Cities metro area, bringing benefits and jobs to greater Minnesota. And with that, I conclude my testimony and greatly appreciate the legislature's consideration of the proposal. I'd be happy to take any questions you have.
Representative Heintzman, thank you very much. Representative Heintzman.
Madam Chair, if there's more testifiers, I can wait.
Okay, we do have another testifier. We have with us today Mike Berthelsen. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony and state your name.
Chair, I was really here to help support any questions that you may have. So we don't have any more testimony for today.
Okay, thank you. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Representative Lippert, quite honestly, I don't have a question, but I do have a few comments, and I'll just be very brief. We've had several bills that you have brought to the committee, Representative, and this is another one that has no Senate companion, that has what I think we could characterize as a list of wants as opposed to real needs. And we're thinking about, I think, some lofty goals at the University of Minnesota. I think these are things that we all want, but it's always a balance. And I never in the explanation of what's in the bill heard anything in the context of failing systems that have to be replaced or vehicles that are no longer functioning and so on and so forth. It's super difficult to balance that with the real needs that students face in regards to tuition. And we hear a long list of bills working on that issue. Very important to consider that when we're talking about such a significant amount here, $75 million. And I just a quote is this bill, I think if I heard the explanation correctly, is to achieve our emissions goals. A lofty goal, good goal. We all appreciate that. Every one of the members of this committee appreciate that goal. The question is $75 million. And another bill that has no Senate companion, and I doubt that would ever be heard in the other side. Once again, maybe that doesn't matter, but just a couple of observations, and I'll wrap it up there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Heintzman, we weren't quite communicating yesterday, and we aren't quite communicating today either. Mr. Stennis did speak about aging infrastructure that is a good candidate for upgrading to modern technology, and there's new innovative geothermal technology that would be a great fit for the University of Minnesota. Mr. Stennis may be available to say that, speak to that again.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
It appears we need a clarification. I specifically pointed out I did not hear about failing infrastructure. That's what I'm looking for when we're talking about infrastructure that is in desperate need of replacement, failing systems. There's a difference, and that's why I pointed that out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Becklin.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to keep my comments and questions short, but I do have a question for Representative Lippert. So I'm a big fan of geothermal, to be honest. I really am. I've seen it work in many places. It's gotten less expensive over the years. But within this is a massive investment, $75 million. So within this investment, would, as the savings come in, first and foremost, do you have any kind of numbers of how much the savings would be? I guess that's my first question to you, Representative Lippert.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would turn to the testifiers from the University of Minnesota for those numbers.
Mr. Stennis.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, we're still working on the specifics of which systems would get replaced and the modeling around that that would come in terms of the energy savings we would expect to realize. So that is work yet to be done, but we'd be happy as we do that work to bring that information back to the committee.
Representative Mecklen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that wasn't the greatest answer. However, there should be a savings, right? That's why we're going to invest in this whole thing. So I guess the next question is, will the University of Minnesota then be paying back all this money for whatever they do save in the backside? Because is anybody in the private market, when they invest in something to save something, it's called a return on investment. And there's no way to know, like, you know, is there going to be a report coming out? How are you going to, like, understand all these numbers going forward to know what the savings was, as well as, you know, did that money come back for the investment? And I think maybe Ms. Representative Lippert could answer that.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Mecklen. So I'm assuming that when you have savings, it frees up funds that are available for the mission of the university. But I would turn to Mr. Stennis or Mr. Bertelsen to respond to that and say more.
Madam Chair, I think I could.
Okay, Mr. Bertelsen, please proceed.
So thank you, Madam Chair, members, and Representative Mecklen. So we do think very clearly about the return on investment for infrastructure and energy investments. A great example for us is the main energy plant in Minneapolis. That was over $100 million investment. And that at the completion of that, we, even after paying debt service, we're reducing the O&M burden and tuitions needed to spend on that utility by $2 million a year. So we think very clearly and carefully about how these kind of investments can both make sure to meet the university's reliability needs. You know, because first of all, we have to be able to meet the program and those needs, but also we try to do it in the most cost-effective way possible. To your point, this kind of investment will clearly help significantly to make this a more cost-effective investment. We know that the St. Paul and other campus utility plants are aging and will need replacement. And so that's going to be a major investment. And what we would like to do is make the investment in the right direction that points us in the place that helps us achieve sustainability goals as well as good financial outcomes. And it's kind of this, these funds would help us advance those objectives.
Representative, do you have one last follow-up?
Well, I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I get the point, and I'm a big fan of geothermal. There's a lot of good positives there, and it can save a lot of money. What my concern is the colleges and all state institutions always come ask for more money. And even when we actually invest a tremendous amount of money in things that save them money, they ask for more money. So they should be actually being asked to actually put that back into the bucket. So I guess I'll leave it at that. And I thank you, Madam Chair. I'll lower my hand now.
Okay, Representative Cleghorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, Mr. Berthelsen answered part of the question that I had. But I would like to know, I'm a firm believer in replacing the roof when the sun is shining, as opposed to waiting for the bad event. Could you just kind of help me understand if these investments are not made within a reasonable period of time, will we have a bad outcome, or what happens to a building, or what are the costs if these heating systems fail? You know, I'm thinking about experiments lost and things like that. or if they're in dormitories, what do we do with the students when that kind of catastrophic failure happens or water damage? Can you just kind of walk me through that a little bit?
Mr. Berthelsen.
Madam Chair, Representative. Yes, I think you're exactly right when we think similarly that we need to make these investments before failure, because we really don't, and some, depending on the campus, I don't have one answer because each campus has its unique situation. We, to best of our ability, build in redundancy. So if one piece of the equipment fails, that we always have, are able to keep the campus running, even if one boiler would fail. That's one of the reasons we operate through district energy as opposed to in, we don't have, we try as much as possible not to have boilers and kind of systems at each individual building, but serve it through a district system, which is much more efficient and effective. But there are some significant risks on some of the campuses where that where those heating plants are aging to such a point that if they were to fail, the campus would be effectively shut down. And there is don't have the capacity in some of those places to continue without investment.
Representative Clyburn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just one last follow-up. So on our campuses, if you could just help me understand, are the medical facilities also tied to these same heating structures?
Mr. Berthelsen.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, yes. So the hospital and clinics on the Minneapolis campus and the vet hospital on the St. Paul campus are served through the same district systems.
Representative Clyburn, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. That's all.
Representative O'Neill, we have 3 minutes till we move on to our next bill. Go, please proceed.
Madam Chair, so I won't ask my question because we only have 3 minutes, but I would say this looks more like a bonding request because this is infrastructure, as we've said over and over and over again. And just like Representative Clyburn has been saying, this is like a leaky roof. Kind of is, kind of isn't. It's transforming an energy system to make it more efficient, a little different. It's an aging system that doesn't mean it's going to fail, but I think this should be a HEPA request or a bonding request. We're supposed to look at what's for the benefit of the student, and I don't hear a lot of that here. I hear a lot of really infrastructure type things. The other thing I would say is that I heard very clearly them say that this would accelerate the plan they already have. So it sounds like there's already plans in the works and probably dollars appropriated for this sort of thing. I'm guessing something like this is also in their large bonding request, because the University of Minnesota did come to us with a total request of over $1 billion when you include in the $75 million each year of the tails. So this certainly could be within their bonding request instead of here. I fail to understand why it's in this committee. Also, is this request going to go to bonding? Is it going to go to or the capital investment, or and is it going to go to the energy committee? And I guess that'd be a question for the author or the chair.
Representative Lippert, did you want to answer that right now? It was going to be, it's being laid over as the motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill. So certainly the planning, the solar, the electric vehicle fleets, those are not a good fit for bonding. I don't believe that the geothermal portion was in the used bonding request. There's some question about whether that would be a good fit for bonding or not. And so it's here as a request for general funds.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. So I guess I'm still left with the question of if this is accelerating a plan that the University of Minnesota already has, how much is this accelerating the plan? Is it accelerating it by 10 years, by 5 years, by 1 year? This is an awfully large investment that we could be spending to buy down people, students' tuition and other things that have a direct impact on students. It's a very, very large ask. And so I'm not sure that this is, the juice is worth the squeeze. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. I see no further discussion. Representative Lippert, would you like to make closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I thank the committee for the time and consideration today. being able to support the university as it's leading on a sustainability, improving its energy efficiency, and something that's important for the university. It's important for the whole state. It's a wise use of state dollars. And so I think this is an important request, and I encourage the committee to consider it carefully. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Hearing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 4119, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Our next bill on the agenda, we have House File 3915 from Representative Keeler. We have heard this proposal earlier in session, but we are reviewing it in the bill form. We have 25 minutes scheduled for this bill, and we'll plan to wrap up at 3:50. We'll move that House File 3915 be laid over for possible inclusion. We have before us House File 3915. Representative Keeler, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is the Minnesota State Supplement Budget request that we heard. One of the pieces of data that I dug into that I find really interesting and really fun to share is that out of our entire chamber, 40 of us have actually earned degrees from the Minnesota state system. So I think it's important that we continue to invest in the systems that have invested in us. I'm not going to go into much more detail because I know we have testifiers here to talk about the bill. And again, we outlined all of this a couple weeks ago. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll send it over to my testifiers to walk through the language.
Okay. We have with us today Paul Shepherd. Would you please begin?
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Shepherd, and I serve as the System Director for Student Development and Success for Minnesota State. As part of this role, I have the honor to lead our system efforts to address basic needs and security, and those efforts have always included access to mental health resources. This work is done with strong partnership among faculty and staff at all colleges and universities, both statewide student associations, and then various community partners throughout the state. All of us engaged in this work are deeply appreciative of the one-time funding provided to Minnesota State in the last legislative session to advance our work in this area. The funding has enabled Minnesota State to enhance our capacity to address these important issues through a number of innovative strategies that support students throughout the system. Colleges and universities are ahead of schedule in creating websites that clearly identify mental health and basic needs resources available on campuses that also include resources available nationally focused on suicide prevention. We have also created and distributed customizable materials colleges and universities can use to share information about mental health during orientation sessions and at times of high academic stress. Our newly established mental health community of practice has been an active participant in informing these strategies and promises to be a highly engaged group as our work unfolds. We recently awarded grants to 8 Minnesota State colleges and universities that advanced excellent proposals to establish peer support pilot programs. We are also actively engaged in the planning process to implement a broad scale program that will significantly enhance our capacity to provide mental health first aid training at all colleges and universities in the system. Our Basic Needs Committee, which is composed of a majority of students from both student associations, generated an idea to establish a partnership with the United Way's 211 program to implement a system-wide basic needs resource hub. The resource hub will enable all students at every college and university to contact the resource hub 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to receive referrals to helpful resources available on their campus and in their local community to address basic needs concerns. We are extremely excited about this innovative partnership, and we believe that it is unique nationally. We are on track to implement the Basic Needs Resource Hub in the fall 2022 semester. While we are excited for the advancements we have made, we know there is more work left to accomplish. The base funding in this bill will enable Minnesota State to sustain the exciting initiatives we have started into the future. The funding provided in this bill would provide the necessary resources to expand our capacity to support students further by pursuing additional supports, including peer support, crisis response, and complementary clinical support available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week online to address mental health. These additional supports would supplement and enhance the critical work performed by counselors and therapists at our colleges and universities. This funding would also provide the opportunity to pursue additional training opportunities that would be made available to all students as well as faculty and staff focused on mental health. This funding would also enable the Basic Needs Resource Hub to continue into the future, serving as a critical resource for students to gain access to support available to reduce basic needs barriers. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify regarding the mental health and basic needs components of this bill.
Thank you very much. We also with us to have today is Bill Mackey. Welcome to the committee. Please present your testimony and state your name.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities with Minnesota State. I'm going to cover two portions of the funding that is in the bill for Minnesota State for in operations and maintenance. And the first item is new state appropriation of $30 million for fiscal year 2023, which would help stabilize our 54 campuses and their operations. This funding would go directly to our campuses. Right now, our campuses do not have any new funding for the second year of the biennium, and that's putting extreme pressure on them and to be able to cover annual cost increases. The second portion that I'd like to cover is that there's $25 million in the bill for colleges and universities to leave their undergraduate tuition rates at the 2021-2022 levels. This would assist with our goal of student affordability as well as also support our campus operations. Our students would be able to pay tuition at the prior year rates and not have an increase, and the campuses would still receive the necessary revenue they need for their operations. This funds would be utilized in lieu of that increase of 3.5% that was in the maximum that was in the biennial budget bill. The funding for tuition relief and the campus support, the 25 million and the 30 million, they go hand in hand with one another. Our colleges and universities, our 54 campuses, they rely almost equally on state appropriation and tuition revenue to fund campus operations. If campuses do not have access to new revenue of both of these types, they likely have to reduce programs and services in order to be able to balance their operating budgets. Chair Bernardi, that concludes my portion of the testimony.
Thank you very much. With us now, we have Mary Rothschild. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Representative Keeler, and members of the committee. My name is Mary Rothschild, and I'm the Senior System Director for Workforce and Economic Development at Minnesota State. As I'm sure you're aware, the future of Minnesota's economy and workforce continues to face unprecedented challenges. Even before the pandemic crisis, rapid technological changes and new ways of working has disrupted employer operations and the jobs and skills employees need in this new economy. The pandemic has only accelerated these disruptions, disproportionately affecting economically fragile workers who have already been facing challenges in the labor market. While workers with lower levels of educational attainment and recent high school graduates have found employment in our labor shortage environment, we know that technological changes will continue to impact our economy. Working in partnership with employers instead of competing with them for talent is the best way forward. We hear more and more from employers that they are looking for skilled workers that reflects the increasing diversity of their business and their customers. Minnesota State is ready to assist in meeting these needs. Though it remains unclear what our post-COVID life will look like, we do know the post-COVID economy is certain to look very different. Some sectors may never bounce back to their old image, and others may grow through technology more through technology than labor. These changes impact secondary, post-secondary, and our employment markets. Continuing to update our college and university programs in high-demand career and technical fields in partnership with business will be our new normal. As we look to an economic recovery in the post-COVID-19 landscape, the bridge between education and employment is vital to the state of Minnesota. Post-secondary education and skills development in new and inventive ways will be even more critical to facilitating job and economic growth and the lifelong learning necessary for Minnesotans to succeed. The supplemental budget request for workforce development will support our students in at least two ways. One is to address workforce gaps through innovative career, technical, and professional programming. And we'll ensure that these programmatic efforts meet the needs of high demand sectors such as advanced manufacturing, agriculture, healthcare services, information technology, business, and many STEM fields, including information technology. We will also align these programs to ensure, where possible, that we provide students with a tuition-free education by aligning with the Minnesota Future Forward Together grant program through the Office of Higher Education. I'd like to provide just two examples of how these funds may be used. One approach is modeled after a previously funded and successful legislative initiative called the Local Partnership Program. This program connected students using a pathway of dual training between education and employer-based, work-based learning. Dual education also included employer-led career program exposure, and the effort resulted in about 20 new high school and adult pathway programs in high-demand training areas such as culinary, aviation, and HVAC. The other approach is what we call guided learning pathway programs that begins in a somewhat similar way with the end in mind, career advising upon entering college rather than upon degree completion. Programs you may be familiar with include the LIFT program in Southwest Minnesota, Tiger Path in the Alexandria area, and PTEC in the Rochester area. These programs offer students intensive career guidance, hands-on instruction, and real-world experience. Many of Minnesota State's career and technical program areas have extensive needs for new certifications and certifications that are industry recognized. These program developments with this funding will allow students to enter the workforce faster and with stronger immediate employment skills. The workforce fund will allow us to accomplish just exactly that. So thank you. That ends my testimony.
Thank you very much. We do not have any public testifiers today. Members, is there any discussion on House File 3915? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was wondering if Mr. Mackey could give us what the base, because this is adding to the base. This is $60 million in each year, fiscal year of the biennium moving forward. And nowhere in the testimony did I hear what our base appropriations is. And when I ask that, I mean it for the whole biennium, because that's how we do budgeting here. I know that in the language of the bill, it has it for 1 year of the biennium. But if you could do a quick add, if you don't have it, Mr. Mackey, I actually have that number, but it'd be good to hear it from you and then what our base is and what this adds to.
Mr. Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Representative O'Neill, I do not have the exact biennial number in front of me right now. It is about $1.5 billion over the course of the biennium. This bill is asking to increase the base by $60 million going forward to bring it the amount to an annual amount of $811.295 million.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So yes, it is approximately $1.5 billion in the biennium. The University of Minnesota gets somewhere between 1.2, 1.3. I have to look exactly, but this is $1.5 billion. And you're adding $120 million to the base because we do budgeting in two-year cycles, not just one. And yeah, so I just wanted the public to know that we do fund higher education quite a lot. It is I think it's the third or fourth highest budget area in the entire state budget. when you look at general fund money. So it's a large amount, which, you know, I just want to get that on the record that that's where we're starting from. That's $1.5 billion. And this is asking for not a one-time appropriation of $60 million, but it's actually adding $60 million to each year in the tails, which would be $120 million added to the base. So is one thing. The other thing is I'm not quite sure why we're doing almost like a recreation of the dual training program, the pipeline project, which I worked on in 2015. I'm not quite sure what this $2 million is for the workforce development. Are we standing up a new program? Or what exactly is that money and what is it for? Are we recreating something that's already there? Can you help me understand that? I don't know if Mr. Mackey knows that or Mr. Shepherd or Ms. Rothschild.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chair Bernardi?
Chair, you're muted.
Sorry, Ms. Rothschild.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and Representative O'Neill. The difference between the pipeline program that's offered by the Department of Labor and Industry is that that requires an individual to be currently employed, and the dual training takes place through the employer. The dual education that I was referring to is a different program. It permits the individual, the student, to work through an educational program in partnership with the business. And so there are many employers who are not prepared to pay people while they're getting their education, but they're more familiar with and capable of offering internships, capstone type projects, other things that expose students to the workforce without actually having to pay them and/or you know, just basically employ them before they get started. I do see them as companion programs. We partner extensively with the Department of Labor and Industry on the pipeline program, but I would consider this to be more like the local partnership program that was funded a couple of years ago with a very small amount of money. And so they would be opportunities for our colleges and universities to develop new programming to meet business and industry needs in partnership with employers, high school, community-based organizations, and others.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Just thank you, Madam Chair. And the last thing that I would say is that we still have an outstanding issue with how Mid State as a whole deals with presidents that are not acting in accordance with what we expect. We had one resign because many of the of us here in this committee and even further out from this committee demanded a man's resignation, and a few days after that, he did resign, but unfortunately, the systems office took him back in, and he is now working in the systems office. That's unfortunate. So I feel like there's still some untoward activity still happening, and unfortunately, contracts need to be looked at and a few other things within the systems office to make sure that people, staff, faculty, and students are not being harassed, they're not being bullied, and they have a safe workplace and a safe place to learn. So those are still my outstanding concerns that have not been yet addressed. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all I have.
Thank you very much. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Keeler, I want to first start out by saying thank you for putting forward a bill with a Senate author. And I think that we're going to see something come of this because of your effort on making inroads in the Senate. And I just have one question, and that would just be, how is the decline in enrollment affecting Mid State's budget? If that could maybe just be discussed briefly. I know that we've seen some lower enrollment in my own school, Central Lakes College, in my district, and I'm assuming part of this ask is in response to that.
Representative Keeler.
I don't know if Mr. Mackey, if you could talk about enrollment decline. I will say that I think that a lot of the efforts that we're working on is trying to reach out into those populations to, you know, there's been a decline long before
COVID, and I would love that some of these opportunities that we're presenting, we have a lot of people that are looking to get back into a new area of workforce, which might increase enrollment because they want to go back to school. So I think some of these changes that we're looking at, you know, the hope is that we see an incline in enrollment long term, but I'll let Mr. Mackey answer your question a little bit more.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Heinzman, enrollment certainly has been a challenge for our colleges and universities, especially during the pandemic. This request that we have and the funding in this bill is meant to address cost increases and with the expectation that our campuses continue to make adjustments based on locally on their enrollments as they change. So essentially, Minnesota State does not have a habit of requesting funding from the legislature to cover enrollment declines. The enrollment declines are managed by the presidents at each of our colleges and universities. And obviously our enrollment is different at each one of our colleges and universities. And our legislative requests center around receiving funding to help with ongoing cost increases.
Representative Heinzman, did you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciated the answers from Representative Keeler and from the administration.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Keeler, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think we've learned a lot about this and we've had a lot of conversations. I think that this system always has room to grow. And so I take these conversations really serious in ways that we can continue to look at the systems, but we'll just continue support because we know that this is supporting, you know, over 200,000 of our kids here in Minnesota, and that's an important investment to make. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hearing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3915 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Finally on the agenda, we have House File 3581 from Representative Winkler. We have 30 minutes scheduled for the bill, and we will plan to wrap up at 4:30. I will move that House File 3581 be referred to Public Safety. Representative Winkler has a DE amendment labeled DE9. I will move the DE9 amendment to put the bill in the form the author wants. We also have an A6 amendment to the DE9 amendment. Representative Sandell, would you like to move the A6 amendment and tell us briefly what the amendment does?
Madam Chair, I would so move.
Okay. Representative Sandell moves a sixth amendment, and would you briefly describe it, please?
Well, Madam Chair, members and staff, thanks very much for the opportunity to offer this amendment to Representative Winkler's 3581, providing scholarship aid and support for highly qualified applicants to college and university programs in law enforcement. Currently, the bill offers opportunities to this program at Minnesota State Schools. There are, however, four nonprofit private institutions in Minnesota that have post-board approved law enforcement education programs that lead to licensure as a Minnesota police officer. Concordia and St. Paul, University of St. Thomas, Hamline University, and St. Mary's University of Minnesota. Concordia University already offers a post-baccalaureate certificate program that prepares a student who already has a bachelor's degree to become a licensed police officer, which is the basic model for the intensive comprehensive training program in Section 1 of Representative Winkler's bill. This amendment provides that the Commissioner of Public Safety shall designate at least one, and not more than two, nonprofit institutions to provide the intensive law enforcement training program in Section 1, in addition to those designated by Minnesota State. This amendment also provides that the Commissioner of Public Safety appoint a person with experience in criminal justice and law enforcement instruction provided at a nonprofit college to each of the two scholarship selection committees created by the bill. I've spoken with Representative Winkler about the amendment, and he does not object to its provisions. I've also spoken with leadership of Minnesota's private college council, who endorsed this amendment, and I have with me two individuals who are presently involved with these programs and who would answer your questions in detail. We'd certainly like your support by adding this amendment to House File 3581. Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you. Is there any discussion to the A6 amendment? All those in favor of the motion? Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't see whose hand. Oh, there, Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Sandell, I appreciate the explanation as to what the amendment does. One thing that might be helpful when adding the private colleges in on this, do we have any idea what the cost difference might be between what was already in place in the language for MnState system and their programming versus what you'd be looking at in the private college that you've just added to the previous or to the existing language?
Representative Sandell.
Madam Chair and Representative Heisman, thanks for the question. And I've spoken with a representative of the private college program about that, and that's a concern to me as well. But I think, and in some cases, there'd be no change, but in some of it would be a significant, I guess. Janina Sinch is with me today from Concordia University. She may be best to answer that question in detail.
Okay, we have Ms. Sinch. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Janina Sinch, and I currently serve as a Concordia University St. Paul Criminal Justice Department Chair. And I understand that your question, Representative Heintzman, is pertaining to private nonprofit universities and the financial differences. Is that correct?
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, specifically, I'm wanting to know if it's possible to ascertain what the programming cost differences would compare when adding this amendment, which includes private schools into the programming arrangement. So, is it a 5% difference? Is it a 50% difference? Doesn't sound like we have that information at hand, but I think it might be helpful to know that before we add the amendment.
Ms. Sinch.
Certainly, thank you for that information. At this point, I don't have specific information that I can offer you. I can certainly seek that out and provide that for you unless my colleagues that are on with me today would like to contribute to that, Madam Chair and Representatives.
Representative Heintzman, did you want any more follow-up on that question?
Madam Chair, it looks like Mr. Cervenik might have something.
Okay. Mr. Cervenik, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
He's muted, I think.
Mr. Cervenik, we cannot hear you. Mr. Cervenik, we still can't hear you.
And it does appear that his mic is not working. So looks like maybe the bill author, Representative Winkler, may have something.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Heintzman, the Sandell Amendment caps the per participant total so that it wouldn't be a difference between a public college and a private nonprofit college. It just expands the number of institutions that are eligible to participate or where students can be participating.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler, would there be a difference in the programming that might lead to additional costs? I'm just trying to balance that. So we did hear from a previous testifier that there were significant differences in cost, and now I hear you saying that there isn't and that there's a cap, so I'm a little lost as to which it is.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, I'm sorry, Representative Heintzman, this A6 is not my amendment, but my understanding on the reading of the amendment is that it's capped so that the institution would have to, if the private institution wanted to participate in the program, they could, but they would not be able to charge any more than what they would be permissible to charge for a public institution.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler, do you support the amendment?
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Heintzman, I think the amendment expands the potential programming and is perfectly acceptable.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that we should go ahead and continue on.
Is there any further discussion to the A6 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, I will, all those in favor of the motion to the A6 amendment, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the A6 amendment to the DE9 amendment is adopted. Is there, now we have the, is there any discussion to the DE9 amendment? Okay, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the DE9 amendment is adopted. We now have before our House File 3581 before the committee. Representative Winkler,
please. Madam Chair.
Yes?
It's the DE9 as amended is adopted.
Yeah, well, you're right. So we have the DE9 amendment as adopted.
As amended.
No, as amended, excuse me, as amended. So do we need to back up here and take that vote that way?
No, I think the vote is correct. I just wanted to make sure the motion was recorded properly. Thank you.
Okay. And I just want to verify with our staff that that did get recorded correctly. Is that recorded correctly?
I think just for clarification, it would be that the DE9 amendment as amended was adopted.
Right. Okay. And that's what we took the vote on, correct?
Yes.
Okay, just want to be certain. Okay, now we have before us House File 3581. Representative Winkler, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for taking the time to hear this bill today. The genesis of this House file is conversations among a lot of people in law enforcement. And the conversations centered around the fact that traditional avenues for joining law enforcement are producing fewer candidates than they have in the past, that postings for law enforcement positions are resulting in many fewer applications than they once did, and that as police chiefs in particular and sheriffs are looking to diversify the ranks of their officers and to have officers who have the communication skills, the cultural competency, the service leader mindset, and other aspects of professional law enforcement, they have had a harder and harder time finding candidates who fit that description as well, and resulting in a lot of departments essentially bidding against each other to hire those candidates. The solution in House File 3581, as amended, is to create a second career pathway for individuals who already have a 2 or 4 year degree. In Minnesota, that is required in order to become a licensed peace officer. And so we are trying to create a second career pathway for approximately 125 individuals to enter law enforcement. That's a $13 million appropriation. We're also creating a scholarship program for individuals who are leaving high school to enter the program for $2.6 million. We have $1 million for law enforcement explorer programs, $1 million for mentorship, and $800,000 for outreach to potential candidates. The DE6 also includes an expanded version of this bill to include social workers as we look to expand the number of options for law enforcement response available to local jurisdictions. That's the bill that's in front of us. The appropriation for the bill comes out of public safety. We have two existing programs like this under the Department of Public Safety, but they are different in several ways. So the funding stays at the Department of Public Safety. The education training continues through Minnesota State as well now as amended the private colleges who offer this program. And the programs are significantly expanded and focused specifically on diversifying and changing some of the criteria for who enters the program so that individuals who come through the program are more likely to be successfully placed and retained in police departments or sheriff's offices. That's the bill. There are a number of testifiers, and I'm happy to take questions afterwards, of course.
Thank you. We have with us Officer Brad Chin. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony.
Hello, I'm Officer Brad Chin. I work for the St. Paul Police Department. Myself and the Vice President, Ray Brown, has worked alongside Ryan Winkler very much. Currently, as an association, we are creating a scholarship program that does exactly what this bill currently is doing, which is diversifying law enforcement and hiring more police officers. Part of the NBPA, we have a mentorship committee who seeks after students that are in high school who want to pursue a career in law enforcement. And so what we do with these students is we assign them a mentor. After they're assigned a mentor, we assist them by going through college. Right now, we've got a couple grants working where we're going to have nearly $10 million over the next 10 years to put 10 people of color through college every year. While they're going through college, we mentor them. We put them through our Explorer program, and we help them with the career difficulties that oftentimes are given to those who are underrepresented. With me here is my Vice President, Ray Brown, and she has done most of the work that it takes to put this scholarship program on, and I'm going to allow her to present that. And I just want to say I am in uniform, but I'm here representing the National Black Police Officer Association, although I work for the St. Paul Police Department. And my Vice President, Ray Brown, here works for the Maplewood Police Department, and she is here representing NBPA, not her police department. And with that, I will turn the time over to Ray.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, thank you, and welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony, Officer Brown.
Thank you. First, let me say thank you guys for inviting us to even be a part of the conversation. Like I'm sure Brad has echoed, with our association, we have committed to increasing representation and visibility throughout the state of Minnesota. It's something that we're very passionate about, and we believe is something that everyone needs right now. I'm a firm believer in, you know, people can't see themselves or they don't see themselves. And so I was fortunate to have mentors that helped me complete school and get my law enforcement degree. And now that I'm a part of that amazing organization for the state of Minnesota, I'm trying to assist with opening doors for people after us. One reason that I'm, you know, supporting this bill as our association is, aside from the representation part, we believe that what the state is trying to do right now with the bill supports our mission statement. And not only that, I think it's something that in the long term will be beneficial. Minnesota is a changing state. It's growing every day. Our families are looking different. Our communities are looking different. When we have the opportunity to pull people from those communities, and allow them to be in a career that is beneficial for them long term, but not only it's beneficial for those agents. Lots of times we're interacting with community members, and when you have people who are familiar with those customs and norms, sometimes it helps those conversations go a little differently versus someone who may not have experience with that. You get to educate your partners, you get to educate, you know, yourselves, and then it, overall, community members, in return, it helps them get buy-in because they see the officers that look like them, they see the people that understand their cultures and norms, and for them, it's a way of them wanting to come back and invest in their communities because they see the people who are doing the work in the community reflecting their own upbringings.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Yes, ma'am.
With us now, we have Satasha Green-Steven. Welcome to the committee.
Hello.
Chair Bernardi, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Satasha Green-Steven. I serve as the Associate Vice Chancellor for Minnesota State. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss House File 3581. I want to thank Representative Winkler and his staff for reaching out and working with Minnesota State on this bill. And joining me today, I have Scott Berger from Alexandria Technical and Community College, Stephen Kovacic from Hibbing Community College, Tom Draper from Hennepin Tech Local Community College. And Scott Berger will spend a few minutes discussing our current law enforcement programs at Alexandria Technical and Community College. And all of us are happy to answer any questions you might have about our partnership and capacity to support in this programming. Scott, Stephen, and Tom are academic leaders on our campuses, and they also bring nearly a century of law enforcement experience in several communities across the state of Minnesota. 22 of our colleges and universities of Minnesota State educate graduates that can sit for certification and become a police officer in the state of Minnesota through our law enforcement programs that are certified by the Peace Officer Standards and Training Board. Minnesota State also provides 9 skill training provider programs in the state. So we are well aware of the acute shortage of applicants, and particularly diverse applicants to jobs across the state of Minnesota. Representative Winkler's proposal would help prospective as well as our current students and provide support for our programming. Thank you, Madam Chair. With your permission, I'd like to turn the testimony over to Scott Berger.
Thank you very much. With us today is Scott Berger. Please state your name for the testimony. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Scott Berger. I'm currently the Vice President of Academic and Student Affairs in Alexandria at the Alexandria Technical Community College. I'm also the PPOE, or the Minnesota Police Board, coordinator for this program and have been for the last 16 years. When Satasha says there's over a century of experience between us three, all of that is associated with Steve and Tom. I'm not that old. No, I guess I'm joking. But the reality is that we develop our training based upon the Minnesota Police Board objectives, which are ever-changing. And they are continually in flux based upon current trends on things that are taking place within communities and within the state, on expanded education and knowledge that's gained over time. And then they are rolled out to our institutions where we deliver those in 2 primary areas. We deliver them in the academic area, and we deliver them in the psychomotor, or commonly known as skills training areas. And by completing both of those, you're then Minnesota license eligible. Once you've passed the exam, you are now eligible to be licensed, and that is gained once you have received full-time employment. I think any time we can get out there and we can increase the number of recruits or candidates or students, whether they are non-traditional, whether they are seeking second careers or a career pathway or transfer degree or scholarships, the state of Minnesota is going to benefit. I've been in this game since 1982. And I have 20 years of law enforcement experience, which is probably less than what Tom and or Steve have. But I've been in higher ed now for an equal amount of time in the capacity of overseeing the law enforcement program. And I've seen a lot of changes over that time. What I've also seen is a lot of partnerships. So the 4 universities mentioned that are privates, presently send their students to us for skills during the summertime to get the psychomotor training. And some of those probably as well go to Hennepin Tech. So we have formed alliances. We've formed partnerships. I think we're positioned very well to provide an education for those people wanting to make a change in profession into law enforcement. We have programs already that are in place that take less than 8 months to complete, which is in the bill. We have some that are capable of completing that within 26 weeks. So we have models out there already. So rolling something similar to this out will not be a great stretch. So I'm available to answer any questions if I can, or Tom, Steve, or, but thank you for this chance.
Thank you very much. Now we have public testifier with us today. We have Paul Cervenek. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Oh, that's, Paul was having a trouble getting in before. Looks like he has signed off.
I think he's trying to speak, but is struggling. It's not working. So I'll connect with him and see if we can get him back in.
Okay, thank you very much. On hand, we have for questions Tom Draper, with the Professional Peace Officer Education Coordinator, Hennepin Technical College, Steve Kovacic, Peace Officer Standards and Training Coordinator, Hibbing College. And just wanted to let you know that. And we'll just wait to see if Mr. Cervenek can communicate with us. So, okay, so is there any discussion for House File 3581?
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler, I did reach out to some folks back in district and had questions about what their take on this bill might be. And one of the comments that I heard kind of stuck out, and I'm just going to direct it your way and see what your reaction might be. On one hand, I'm hearing the public testimony and, of course, hearing from Scott Berger and some of the positives. But on the other hand, the comparison and the comment that I'm referring to was, Representative Heintzman, how would you feel about a expedited pilot training for commercial airliners? And I said, well, I see your point. We already have a very intensive training program in MnState. What is the argument for the expedited process that appears to be here in the language?
Madam Chair, Representative
Winkler.
There's no reduction at all in the requirements of the program. It's just intended to be completed in a more intensive fashion. So essentially, it's not expedited in the sense that it's easier or that there are fewer requirements. It's expedited in the sense that there is a more intense focus on getting the work done quickly.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Representative Winkler, not to be redundant, but I'm trying to get at the why. And that was just a question that the folks back in district were asking me, and if maybe you could explain that as to why. I think we all understand that there is a need. I get that. But we already do have proven programming in place. Your bill is actually quite long in addressing this expedited process, I think, if I'm reading it correctly. And it is a question of why are you reinventing the wheel? And we seem to already have quite a thorough process currently in place. So if you could address that specifically, it would be helpful.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Heintzman, the why is because the old wheel is not working the way it once did to produce candidates. So we're reinventing it in order to produce more of the kind of candidates that police departments are trying to hire.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Just a comment then. I guess I would question then why not bring a bill that would address the entire programming available at MnState if the opinion of the bill author is that it isn't up to par. You know, that would just be a point. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I see we have a question by Representative O'Neill.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Winkler, for bringing this bill. As I said to you on the House floor, I have a lot of questions. I read it thoroughly, and
I know that you've been making a lot of changes to it, and I just feel like there's some detail that are kind of missing, and so I thought I'd ask you a few questions as to what your intent was in a couple places. And Representative Winkler, do you have the bill in front of you so I can quote line, page and line?
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, I do have the DE-9 in front of me, which is the closest version to a marked up final copy of this committee's report as you're going to have, I guess, in this moment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Winkler. So on the DE 9, it's 2.28 and 2.29. So on page 2, line 28, line 29, you talk about the selection committee and choosing the candidates. And the and this selection committee gets to choose I'm not sure how many. It doesn't really say how many candidates, because then it goes to the commissioner, and then the commissioner gets to select up to 125 people to actually participate in the program. And you've done that twice. So you've kind of mirrored that language in the first article. Let's see, is it an article? Yes, in the first section, the second section. So the question is, in this committee that you've put together, how are they going to vote or move all of those candidates forward? Is it a majority vote, a two-thirds vote, a unanimous vote? Are they going to rank them? Like, what is your thought process as far as how do they move people forward to the commissioner to then select 125 people? Because that's, and we don't know how many people they can even consider. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts were there.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, it would be standard decision-making requirements for any board or commission. I assume that it's a majority vote, and the level of discretion in the bill is intentional. It may be off from your perspective, and I'm open to discussing it, but the idea being here that if we get overly prescriptive in this statute on what exactly they can do and not do, you end up sometimes with unintended consequences. And so the idea is to try to right size the level of discretion that they have. And so if they're finding that there are 250 applicants who fit the criteria and they don't want to narrow it down further, they could forward those to the commissioner if they wanted to for final selection. But the point is it has to flow through this board in order for it to even get to the point where the commissioner could make the final appointment.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Winkler. And that brings me to another question I had about the nomination process. You've got what it looks like two avenues to actually be considered, and the CLIO can nominate or the statewide national peace officers affinity groups. I don't know what that means, and I serve on both public safety and higher ed. Can you tell me what a statewide or national peace officers affinity group might be?
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, an example would be the Minnesota chapter of the National Black Police Association. And in conversation with law enforcement leaders and organizations, there are other affinity groups. There are Latino affinity groups and so forth and others. And so the idea would be that you would have the option to reach out to or identify other such organizations and ask them to make recommendations. And it's really to honor the work that we heard about today. This scholarship program, this second career pathway that we're creating this in this bill is using public funds to do what these organizations, in particular this Minnesota chapter, has done on its own initiative, raising private dollars in order to do this same kind of work. So it's to recognize that this is not starting from scratch, but in fact is building on efforts already underway.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Winkler. And I'm supportive of the bill. There's a few things I didn't quite understand. So also on line 3.20, you said you got a stipend for living expenses, but nowhere in the bill can I see what that max might be. Do you have a consideration as to what that max stipend might be for living expenses?
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, that again falls into the discretion. This is essentially my judgment on the right level of direction to provide to a board, that you have to have an adequate living stipend, I think provides flexibility as prices change, costs change, circumstances may warrant different needs in different cases. So it is putting some discretion in this board to make those determinations.
Representative O'Neill.
Okay, so thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so the board will be making those decisions because I have questions on that whole section, like not only what is the max for living expenses, but what is the max of loan forgiveness? So student loan forgiveness for past education degrees, the signing bonus, the retention bonus, there's nowhere that says what the max might be. So you're saying that the committee gets to decide that or the commissioner decides that? Who is the person deciding what those are going to be? And the other thing I would say too is I believe this is all through DPS. So this is Department of Public Safety Commissioner, where many of these things really should be an OHE. And as we get further down the bill, you know, especially when we talk about converting something to a student loan, the commissioner of DPS doesn't have any ability to do that. That has to be OHE. So there's just this kind of mix of things throughout the bill that kind of need to be teased out. So maybe you just answer for that section on page 3, who is making those decisions?
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, I actually misspoke. It is the Commissioner of Public Safety. You're a little bit stealing the thunder of Representative Keeler, who has raised those exact same issues with me in terms of who is the right entity to do oversight. And that is something that we are going to have an ongoing conversation about. And I suspect it's going to happen as soon as your questions wrap up.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. This is where my brain goes, Representative Wheeler, and I'm reading through the bill, and I literally have the exact same concerns. Like, well, this really isn't in the jurisdiction of DPS. It really should be an OHE because they do all the student loan stuff. They do scholarship stuff. They do all of that. And so while some of it, yes, belongs in public safety, and I can even see from where you did the statutory reference at the very beginning, you have section 1 says it's 626.8516, which is obviously in law enforcement. And if they want to stand up a training program, you know, fine. But when you're talking about funding it, now you kind of crossed over into higher ed stuff. And so later you've got references to statutes that are in the higher ed realm. And so, yes, maybe a lot of this would probably need to take offline, but for example, on page 6, where you've got this really should be under, because it's a scholarship program, so it really should be under OHE. And I know you did this bill or this amendment quickly and all of that. So there is one other actually really big question I have, as I'll just condense it down because we're running out of time. And on page 7, and it's line 7.6, when you talk about the nominations in that section, it's the CLIO only can nominate up to 2 candidates. And the commissioner now narrows that down to 125. So I have no idea like how many they would even be able to in total nominate. But the CLIO now only nominates 2 compared to these, let's see, what did we call them? The statewide and national peace officers affinity groups get to nominate the rest. So is that a typo or was that intentional? Representative Winkler.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, it is each CLIO could nominate up to 2. So there could be a very large pool of applicants that the CLIOs would be. We should not use lingo. Chief law enforcement officers, if people who are not in public safety. The chief law enforcement officers could each go up to, could nominate 2 to be put in the pool.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I'm wrapping up. I'm sorry I'm taking so long. Okay, so that makes more sense to me because you didn't have it in the top section on page 2, but you did have it down on page 7. And so I was just confused because the language was different. So if it's each chief law enforcement officer, each CLIO can nominate up to 2, that makes more sense and it seems more balanced. The rest of it, yeah, we need to have a conversation about which jurisdiction some of these things are in, which really squarely land in OHE's jurisdiction. And so I'm sure Representative Keeler will tell you her thoughts about that, too. I do have one last question. You made a reference to some federal statutes Let's see if I can find it here. Yes, here it is. On page 13, I was so curious, like, why did you use the federal references here to define a public institution? It's on page 13, starting in line 13.6, and it's also in 13.9 and 10.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, I don't have an answer for you that on that. I would refer you to the drafter of the bill, Mr. Diebel.
Representative O'Neill. We have Mr. Hopkins raising his hand. Perhaps he can make some clarification.
Thank you, Madam Chair, because that's definitely a higher ed reference, not a Department of Public Safety. Thank you.
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, so the language there on page 13, this is in the social work scholarship section, and that section is coded in the higher education statutes. So this just has the language that's used elsewhere in the higher education statutes to define what exactly the recognized cost of attendance is. And this has the language from the state grant program, which caps the recognized cost of attendance for private colleges or private colleges at the highest recognized cost for public universities. So it has that language that, you know, caps the amount of recognized cost of attendance for private schools. And that's just straight out of the state grant program. The language that's in here is found elsewhere in the higher education statutes for other scholarship programs.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Nope, just thank you. Thanks for indulging me in all the questions. There were a lot because it just didn't make sense to me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler, you and I have talked a lot about it, and following up kind of what Representative O'Neill was mentioning, for how many pieces of this are scholarships, or I mean, even the very first line of the bill says it's a bill regarding higher education. After having a good conversation with Commissioner Olson and Nikki, I just believe that there has to be some sort of, you know, from their terms, even technical support or advisory role in all of this, because we can't be, what I fear is that, like, I have teachers of color that I'm trying to get into classrooms too, and there's no, you know, there's no expedited option for that. We're not able to pay back old degree, you know, loans that are carrying over. And so that we're just missing a lot of consistency in these areas that we, you know, we're losing teachers too. We're losing nurses that, you know, if we start doing this and expediting for our police officers, when are we going to start doing that, you know, for these other areas that are really massively in need of new professions? And so my biggest concern and what we've shared and hopefully will be taken into consideration the next time is that OKI will have a technical support and advisory role in this. Also understanding that there's no language in here that actually talks about the scholarships as far as, are they last option scholarships? Are they first option scholarship? Is there a $6,000 cap? You know, I don't know any of that. And so I just want to express the concerns there and knowing that we're working with OHI to make sure that they're part of this work. So Representative Winkler, where you are with making sure that OHI is a part of this language moving forward.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Keeler, I 100% share your perspective on all the points that you just raised, and committed to making sure that we have the correct higher ed oversight. Just by way of explanation for the committee, this bill came about because we have two existing programs for access to law enforcement run through DPS today, and we tried to make them better, and we tried to make them more expansive, and so we ended up in doing so, triggering a lot more higher ed interaction than those existing programs under DPS have. So that's why we're in this hybrid space. And Representative Keeler, I am committed to you and to the Department of or the Office of Higher Education, to the committee members here, that we will adjust the bill as needed to make sure we have the right level of consistency and oversight.
Representative Keeler.
That's it. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Winkler.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Winkler, do you have any closing comments?
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the discussion today. I want to thank the testifiers for bringing forward their testimony and sharing with the committee the challenges that we face, and I appreciate everyone's willingness to continue working on this initiative, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Hearing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3581, as amended, be referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Committee. The CLA will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Vice Chair Christensen.
Aye.
Christensen, aye. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, no, not at this time.
O'Neill, nay. Representative Albright. Representative Albright. Representative Daniels.
Daniels votes no.
Daniels, nay. Representative Erickson.
Erickson votes no.
Erickson, nay. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Heintzeman.
No.
Heintzeman, nay. Representative Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, aye.
Cleburne, aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick, nay. Representative Crenshaw.
Crenshaw, no.
Crenshaw, nay. Representative Mason.
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Meckland.
Meckland, no.
Meckland, nay. Representative Neuer.
Aye.
Neuer, aye. Representative Sandell.
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Sandsted.
Aye.
Sandsted, aye. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson. Representative Albright. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 7 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 7 nays, House File 3581, as amended, is referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Committee. Thank you, Representative Winkler, and to our testifiers today. We are now wrapped up, and thank you, members, for the great hearing today. We'll be meeting next on April 5th. The meeting is adjourned.